more about it than I do, so I welcome your contribution. I'm going to make a series of really random observations about it, rather than go through the narrative of the riot, which is fairly well known. The first is that the occasion for the riot was the coming of the Assizes to Bristol. It's interesting, since Judge Jeffreys' bloody Assizes took place in Bristol off the Monmouth Rebellion and around the West Country in 1685, any judges coming into Bristol for the Assizes in folk memory are unpopular. And that lasted for 150 years, right up to 1831. So the very fact that an Assize judge was coming into Bristol, the folk memory of what had happened at the Assizes in past in Bristol was still there. So, oh, thanks. What? Well, what's an Assize? Oh, sorry. Well, Mike will probably know, describing the size better than me. It's basically where the court, where the most serious cases are heard. And the judges would go, there'd be Assize courts in every county, maybe once or twice a year. So they come into Bristol and deal with the most serious cases. So that folk memory amongst Bristol was there. And rioting was also a popular tradition in Bristol by then as well. I mean, lots of people were coming in to riot in the drop of a hat. And in particular, I mentioned an honourable mention for the Kingswood Colliers, who, whenever the price of grain went up or flour, would march into Bristol, seize what they wanted from the ships and march back home again. And as a precaution against being arrested, they generally take a couple of captains of industry back to Kingswood and hide them in the mines with them so some negotiation could be done and no charges would be brought. This somewhat changed after the Gordon riots in London in 1783, when things took on a different turn and violent repression matched riots. In Bristol in 1793, there was the Bristol Bridge Riot. Now, up to then, the riots had been fairly well tolerated. Even though there had been a lot of injuries and so on, very few people were sent to jail for long terms, no one had been killed, and the authorities tend to deal with it in a kid-glove kind of way because they didn't want to evoke the memory of what had happened in the past at the Assizes. 1793, though, 11 people were killed by the yeomanry. So that was in people's minds. But before then also, you had the French Revolution. So the Gordon riots, the French Revolution of 1789, and a general feeling in the government that radical kind of revolution was in the air. So the rioting wasn't then a part of a popular good old Bristol tradition. It could be part of something much more sinister, much more widespread. So this was certainly in the minds of the authorities. And across England and Wales in 1831 and before it and just afterwards, there was a whole series of basically popular insurrections. There was the Merthyr Uprising, Dick Penderyn, there was the March on Newport, John Frost. There was a feeling that the physical force Chartists might be prepared to seize power, but the working class was cut between reformist measures or actually violent revolution, and there were certainly plenty of conspiracies, many of which will be outlined here this week. So the authorities were very jumpy about what happened. An interesting observation is what's the view of 1831 outside Bristol and inside Bristol? Last year was Brunel 2000, when Brunel was celebrated at great expense and funding across the city. One thing that didn't get mentioned very much was that Brunel was actually a special constable in Bristol at the time of the Queen Square riot, and did in fact rescue some looted furniture from some of the buildings in Queen Square. Well, he said he was rescuing furniture. To anyone else, he was just taking furniture out of a burning building, so he may well have been the first looter, but came up with a good excuse to the magistrate. Anyway, I distributed a leaflet at Brunel 2000, which was mildly critical of Brunel. In fact, it was more than mildly critical. And it inspired an article in Venue by Eugene Byrne. And I was critical of Brunel because of what Brunel had done in the 1831 riot. And Eugene Byrne wrote in Venue, "What was the 1831 riot? Just a load of people running amok. Just a load of people robbing, attacking people, assaulting people, rape, pillage, random, completely, you know, like Saturday night in town is these days, basically, is what Eugene was saying." And that was it. And Eugene is one of the better political commentators in Bristol. He's pretty fairly well versed in Bristol history. So it was really a surprise then to see 2 weeks later The Guardian was running a top 10 radical moments in British history where readers could nominate. And there, nominated in 10th place, 1831, the Bristol Queen Square riot, which according to Eugene Byrne was a load of people running amok, but according to some Guardian readers, was one of the most seminal moments in English working class history. And the point they made where was that it had come as part of the Reform Act, but the 1832 Reform Act, which did finally come in, was argued in that article that wouldn't have happened if it hadn't been for the Queen Square riot in 1831. So on the one side, and there was then a poll of the top 10 of these radical history moments. Unfortunately, Queen Square didn't top it. The Putney debates was that Queen Square was in the top 10. So there's a vision outside Bristol, and an awareness of the seminal role that riot played in British history. In Bristol, there's absolutely nothing. There's no commemoration. There's nothing in the redeveloped Queen Square. I understand there's going to be some signboard put in the corner. There's nothing on the old jail gate down at the Cumberland Basin. Well, apart from what two people did put there themselves a few years ago and then got taken down. So completely ignored in Bristol's history. So part of this history, part of this week is an attempt to reinstate the memory of those people. Rogers touched on it also. I think one of the other reasons was the Peterloo Massacre is widely remembered and revered in working class history. And a load of peaceful demonstrators were cut down by the yeomanry. And I think the reason that Bristol doesn't get the same kind of worthy write-up in that is they weren't quite as worthy as the people who were massacred, who were walking in peaceful protest. The people in Bristol were up for a fight. They were rampaging, they were looting, they were fighting, they were fighting back, they were drunk, they were having sex on Queen Square. Not the kind of material which martyrs are usually made of. And I think Bristol has certainly suffered because of that. And if you look at any of the etchings of the time, it's quite remarkable what happened. As Roger says, if it was widespread chaos disorder, there'd have been crime, people on purple, crime, Bedminster would have been set on flames, the whole south of the river would have gone. But it wasn't like that, it was targeted. And if you look at the etchings of the time, it's quite remarkable to see what was going on. When there was a looting on 7,000 bottles of claret from the Bishop's Palace and so on. But it's all, apart from the wild bacchanalia, it was like a car boot sale. The people who were looting stuff and then erecting like wallpaper pasting tables, but fine mahogany tables from the Bishop's Palace, from the Custom House, and then flogging stuff to their fellow rioters. And people weren't just saying, hang on, you just robbed that, mate, I'll have that. They were actually buying stuff off them. There's a famous occasion where some bloke had a mahogany table, which he failed to flog for 10 minutes, so he smashed it up with an axe in a fit of temper. There was also the usual stuff afterwards. There was all the outside agitators. There were supposed to be Welsh agitators were seen in the town the weeks before, as if the people in Queen Square needed any inspiring on. So a cross between a car boot sale, a Roman orgy and a full-scale riot. So it's probably not surprising in that case that the City Council hasn't commemorated it. It reminds me of now also, the key salient factor in all this, in those times, it was impossible, absolutely impossible, for working class or poor people to better themselves in any way. Completely impossible. There was no way you could get yourself out of the social class where you were born in. Now, afterwards, there might be hundreds of ways. You might become a pop star, you might become a footballer, whatever. There was absolutely no way. You were there wherever you were. And most of the people who rioted in Queen Square came from the south of the river, from Bedminster and beyond. There was absolutely no way that those people could improve their lot in 1831. No way. They were there. They were always going to be poor. They were always at the mercy of price rises and so on. There was no way they could alter their lot. So when they had the chance to come into Queen Square and take what they'd never had a chance of getting before, it was not surprising that they took it. And it was a widespread fear, I mean really a physical, primeval fear of what the working class, what the huddled masses south of the river might do if they came into town. And really, what it just strikes me again is that's the only time really now when the working class comes back into the centre of Bristol and take it over is on a Friday and Saturday night. And there's still that primeval fear there. Good folks flee from the city centres on Friday and Saturday night when the working classes come in and misbehave and go wild and get drunk and fornicate in Corn Street. So I'm told. The other thing I think it is important to say is that towards the end of it, they're basically portrayed as victims. There was this hapless mass in Queen Square. The yeomanry came in, cut, slashed, burnt. They all killed. That was it. They were hopeless. In fact, that's not the case. And this is an area where a greater investigation of what's the mentality of the mob and what was going on would certainly be repaid. But lots of instances of organised fight back, of people trying to arm themselves to fight back against the yeomanry, luring them into traps fighting. The sort of guerrilla warfare spread over the city over 2 days in St. George area, there were widespread fighting over there. So again, it wasn't, they weren't just there as a mass of victims ready to be slaughtered. The other thing, which again is quite contemporary today, is when after a few days there was the roundup of those who were guilty, or trying to find the people who'd done it. And once again, the interesting thing that came about was how people were verbal. What things people said or alleged to have said were counted against them. Particularly, I mean, the four people who eventually were hung played a very minor part in the riot. In particular, Christopher Davis, who was the one from Bedminster, his mother was the landlady of the Hen and Chicken. Basically, what he'd done, he'd had a few drinks, he was going around the mob and he was saying various things. For example, when the Bishop's Palace was burnt down, he said, "Bloody good job. Let's use the stones from the palace and mend the roads and that'll be a better use for them." When they stormed the old jail gate, he said, "This is the finest day all England has ever seen, let it spread over the country." Again, just walking around with a couple of bottles of wine in his hand, for which he was executed. So basically, the people, you know, I mean, they just chose four people at random, and Christopher Davis had misfortune to be one of those who was executed. I think we need, you know, what is the legacy of 1831? I think it's part of a long legacy of Bristol's riotous, fun-loving history, and one which we need to restore in the public memory. And a lot of what's happened in the past is in the Bristol folk memory, and I think if this week can play a role in restoring that to the kind of prominence it deserves, then it'll be work well done. Thank you.
I just wanted to add a few more points